Okay. Hey guys, it's Eric RPG once again with another Castlevania retrospective, and I'm also again joined by
David McBurney, fanboy master of the Q&A Quest podcast, brought back to life after 100 years to talk about Castlevania.
Yeah, and this week we're talking about Dracula X, which is a series of ports and or side entries that are somewhat ports.
There's like 2.5 games between all the things we're about to discuss.
And then there's one game I completely forgot to mention in the first episode, which is the Tiger LCD Castlevania Simon's Quest game. Oh. It sucks. Don't play it.
It's a Tiger handheld. There's nothing to it. I think there might also be an even rarer Tiger handheld of Symphony of the Night.
There is?
I've heard tell of that. There's another...
That's like GameCom Resident Evil 2 level stuff.
Well, there was also a planned GameCom Symphony of the Night that also absolutely never came out, but... What's really beautiful about that one is that there are alleged screenshots of it that were mocked up for magazines, and they're very obviously someone just took a screenshot of the PlayStation version and removed all the colors.
Oh, I guess we could also somewhat mention the canceled 32X game. Which had character artwork that was basically just a recolored and reskinned Richter Belmont, who is the main character of the Dracula X game.
Yeah, the original. All the ones that are just Dracula X. Also Dracula Double X. It's going to get complicated.
Although he is a playable character in Dracula X 2, which is Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, but there's... what was the other... Like, there's a couple of sprites floating around for 32X Castlevania, which fans often refer to as the Bloodletting, but whenever, like, Koji Igarashi, who knew of the project, is asked about it, like... What he said is essentially, the game was never called that. It didn't really have a title.
Someone actually made a ROM hack based on those images for Dracula X for the Super Nintendo, so you could look up that character.
Yeah, like, it's a perfectly decent sprite. It clearly took place after Dracula X. I mean, there's like a slightly older version of Maria sprite that's also floating around. But... Yeah, it was supposed to, like, the other sprite was supposed to be, like, a rival vampire hunter, and that's about the most that we know about this 32X Castlevania that, after many long and painful years, kind of morphed into Symphony of the Night.
But, Rondo of Blood is, its full name is, Akumoto Dracula X, Chizuno Rondo, which is, translated to, Demon Castle Dracula X, Rondo of Blood.
Yeah. The X is really the... Like, calling it Dracula X is kind of this weird thing that happens because they chose to call it Castlevania Dracula X in the American Super Nintendo version, but, like, it would really, more literally, given the localization practices, it would just be Castlevania X Rondo of Blood.
Mm-hmm. But, in this game, it was developed for the PC Engine Super CD 2 ROM system.
CD-ROM-ROM?
CD-ROM 2. I guess it's specific because, like, maybe there was a part one that they never released, but whatever.
There's different like sort of cartridges that you put in with the CD, the Super CD, and some of them have like more RAM.
But you had to get either the standalone disc based system to play this, or you had to get an add-on for the original PC Engine.
Yeah.
Or the TurboGrafx CD, depending on what region you're in. Because I don't think it had region locking.
It did not. The region locking was, how are you going to get this? But, yeah.
And I... Yeah. Do you... I remember seeing those import game ads in, like, magazines like EGM. And that's usually where I found out about games like this. Like,
yeah.
Game Fan, specifically, had a big spread on this game.
Yeah, GameFan, like, existed as, like, a magazine arm of a video game import store at first, so it had a lot of spreads for things like this, which is part of how Dracula X cultivated a mystique.
But, in this game you play as, Richter Belmont, who, up to this point in the timeline, is probably the most powerful Belmont game, to ever be, because he's got a lot of spiritual power, which and basically... culminates in a new gameplay mechanic where you can use a special attack based on one of your special weapons that basically destroys everything.
The item crash, which didn't come back in the Super NES port. I'm going to be complaining about that version a lot.
Oh, actually, it did.
It did? I remember it as, yeah. Like, there was, like, one... Like, the cross weapon got replaced with its item crash, but there was not actually an item crash button.
The cross one was, edited so that it was less religious-looking. And I think it just shoots a bunch of crosses across the screen.
Yeah, it's the Grand Cross item crash, essentially.
Yeah. And it's also missing the Bible sub-weapon.
Which was really only useful in one circumstance in the Turbo version, but that's getting ahead of ourselves.
But the Bible sub-weapon kind of works like the Grand Cross, except that, like, basically is a much smaller hitbox, and it just circles across the screen.
Yeah.
They changed it as a shield. They changed that in Dracula X, where it just basically shoots a laser, but that's it.
I love lasers.
And that only works if you're playing as Richter, because Richter's the only one that could do the item crash.
Yeah, not that, Maria gets an entire... that is another thing worth noting. This is the only one where you can play the entire game as two separate characters. Maria has an entire separate set of sub-weapons.
But she has to find in the second level of the game. The actual second level, because this game also borrows a page from Castlevania 3 where there are alternate paths that lead to alternate versions of levels or different levels entirely.
Yeah, and these are not unlike Castlevania 3, where you would just get a choice at the end of a level. Like, Dracula X has a setup where you have to find the way to certain levels, so sometimes, like, there's at least one of them. Sometimes they're kind of punishments, like, you screwed up here, so you get sent to a harder next level. So, like, you'll get, if you fall through certain pits, you'll just end up in an alternate path that leads to a different level.
Or you can pick a wrong path, and it'll actually send you backwards.
Yeah.
Meaning that you don't get to complete the level and you have to do it over again.
Yeah, although thankfully, this game also has a save system. So.
Yes. You get the save and you can
You can just jump from level to level.
Yeah. And it's got a weird feature where the money, instead of being used for a score system, is used to purchase, like, unlockable tech videos on how to beat certain bosses.
Yeah, tip videos on that. Tip videos on some of Richter's weird, more obscure mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Like his ability to backflip.
Yeah, he can backflip, which is useful in very specific circumstances, but will also probably get a new player killed the first time they realize what it is and how it works.
And this game gets rid of the multi-directional whip from Castlevania 4, but it does let you still... jump off of a staircase and jump back on a staircase.
Yeah, which is really, really useful, really important.
The only problem is that he's kind of slow when he moves through staircases.
But in general, I would say this game is actually a little easier than the NES trilogy.
I mean, there's the save system for one, so you don't have to worry about lives or continues.
Yeah, but I mean, even in terms of, like, how it designs its levels, there's less gotchas, there's less getting knocked into instant death.
You also have a little bit more control over Richter's jumping.
Yeah, he's not as fully committed, his momentum's not as heavy. His general, like, his sub-weapons are generally better, like, a lot of them will have very minorly tweak properties, but even just the addition of an item crash can help a lot of them suddenly have uses.
And speaking of Maria, she's actually the sister of Annette Renard, who's Richter's love interest.
Yeah, Annette doesn't get to come back in the next game, but Maria does.
And they apparently are orphans because their parents were killed by Dracula.
Yeah. They went to some trouble to make sure that Dracula was actually a monstrous character, rather than just someone you went and beat up.
Maria uses attacks based on the four Satan beasts of Japanese mythology.
Yeah, a lot of East Asian countries have, like, names for these, and, like, they kind of spread across that region mythology-wise, but...
Or she can weaponize the power of her horrible singing voice, apparently.
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
The musical notes.
Yeah, but she's also just, like, she is easy mode if you can unlock her. She has a double jump, she can change directions in mid-jump, she is not committed to standing still while attacking.
And she's got a lot of powerful attacks, and she's DPS. The only downside to her is that if you take damage with her, she'll take twice as much damage as Richter does.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be taking damage as her, because she's so maneuverable. Oh, she also has a slide for some reason?
Yep.
Very strange, she just sort of...
And
forward on her stomach.
She's got the special Street Fighter-like attack where she'll become a berserk version of herself and do lots of damage to an enemy.
Yeah, very, very versatile, a much easier way to play the game. Of course, you have to get far enough into the game to unlock her, but getting to her is relatively easy and painless.
Of course, there's four other people to rescue, two which are completely optional, but they offer cutscenes. And one is required to... Well, you don't really get the best ending of the game, but you'll feel better about yourself for rescuing Annette.
Yeah. I think you don't... I think you technically skip a boss if you don't... If you rescue her.
Yeah, because I think it's the boss you fight... Like, you'll fight her before you fight Shaft again.
Yeah, you fight a vampire version of Annette if you fail to rescue her. But it's... Like, the game is... Pretty, like, for these old Castlevania games, it's pretty content dense. There's also, like, a bonus stage that basically is only unlockable once the game's been finished, the Stage 5 Prime.
Hmm.
Which, also, that is easily the hardest level in the game. It's the kind of bonus content you don't expect from this kind of game, because it's literally, you finish the game, here's a harder stage.
It's also really 90s, because, like, for some reason, Dracula is really young-looking.
I love the cutscene art in this game, where they can't do actual movie scenes, so it's like these sprite animations trying to give the impression of an FMV.
Yeah.
It's all gorgeous.
It's also got some really jazzed up music. In fact, like, that seems to be the theme, like jazz/techno.
Yeah, it has a track called, I want to say it's called Den, that's a really good mix of a bunch of classic Castlevania tunes. There's also a couple of, like, tracks that are on the CD that are never used. There's a remix of Cross Your Heart from Haunted Castle that's really, really good.
And this is also the second game that Michiru Yamane did soundtrack for the Castlevania game.
Yeah.
The first being Bloodlines.
It's every bit as good as her reputation. It's, both of those have fantastic soundtracks, but we'll get to Bloodlines some other time.
And he's also Richter Belmont's also the youngest Belmont to appear in a game, because he's apparently 19 here.
Huh. I had never been clear on how old Richter was actually supposed to be, but I think, like, later games sort of designate him as, like, the last of the vampire hunters. He's sort of the last real Belmont, and some of the later ones will sort of have to dance around, like, well, this is a side family Belmont or some other thing.
But, the last real one until Julius shows up, but...
Yeah, like, Julius comes back, and, like, he's the return of the Belmont line. But between him and Richter, like, everyone is sort of like a...
It's like everyone's a Belmont, but, like, they're not the Belmont name. They, like, apparently one of the Belmonts had a daughter, and they got married to someone else and took
over. Yeah,
they're
all branch families. Like, this is also them sort of, like, being, well, there's no Belmonts in Bram Stoker's Dracula, and for some reason we still consider that canon.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll just make Morris the Belmonts there.
Yeah. This weird Texan man that stabs Dracula with a knife.
Excuse me. I actually am feeling a little bit under the weather today,
because
the weather got warmer, and now my allergies are all out of whack. But
this must be part of Dracula's evil plan.
Yeah, but Dracula's curse. The interesting thing about this game is the opening intro sequence is completely voiced in German.
Yeah. They really went all, like, presentationally, Turbo CD games tended to really go all out with, like, their like cutscenes and voice.
Now, apparently, in the PSP port, it's still German, but the voice actor changed for some reason.
Yeah, I've got no guesses as to why they did that, but that port's got problems.
I think
they dubbed the rest of the game for that as well.
Yeah, it's like the only port of Dracalux to get a dub, which I think is the base for the Requiem release.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's not great emulation.
But, moving on to the other Draculox game.
Oh, I want to bring up one last thing about this that I really enjoy. Which is that the opening level of Dracula X is you going through one of the cities from Castlevania 2 and it's getting destroyed.
Oh, yeah. And, Rondo of Blood is, sort of port of that game.
Oh, Castlevania Dracula X. Oh.
But, this game, unlike the last one, has, like, endings based on who you rescue. But, the artwork's completely different. It's ugly looking. And it controls not as nearly as good as the PC Engine version. But the only real claim that it has that I could consider good is its soundtrack translated really well. In fact, in some cases it's superior.
Yeah, it's a game where, like, look up the soundtrack on YouTube and then forget about the game it's attached to. There's so many compromises. The game is just mean. Like, someone noticed that Dracula X on Turbo CD was easier and took that as an affront, so this game is much, much harder.
Yeah, do you like invincibility frames? Too bad. You get hit stunned until oblivion if you aren't careful.
Yeah, the infamous one is what they did to the final boss fight.
Yeah, let's remove the floor and just make a bunch of pillars, and then second forms of giant demon that you have
that
to somehow get around.
An entire pillar!
It's like, so it's more a matter of, like, you trying to second guess where Dracula's gonna teleport to.
Yeah, I had to fight that thing like 30 times to finally beat it, and it didn't feel like I had actually learned anything. I just got lucky.
So you either have to, like, bring an axe into that fight and just sit on one of the pillars and hope he doesn't land there.
Yeah. Speaking of bringing an axe into a fight, this game made the knife even more useless because there's no item crash, so it can't do, like, the, like, 100 knives attack. But also...
No, it actually is in there.
It is? I've never gotten it to work.
But, don't forget that... Oh, yeah, this game also features the key, which was in the final level in the PC Engine release, but it shows up in the alternate version of Stage 4. Like, and you have to carry it through the level most of the time.
Yeah, like, the thing about the key in original Dracula X was that you sort of... It was what you used to open up the cages that the captured maidens were in, but, like, they were always in the same level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the trick was that you would find the cage and then you would have to find the key and go back. Or, like, you would have to find it earlier, but it was never you were going to be carrying it across levels. To get there, the alternate route stages are basically gone from Castlevania Dracula X, except for, like, two circumstances. One, you need the key to unlock Maria. No, she is not playable in this for some reason. Mm-hmm. And two, there's, like, an alternate stage at the end of Stage 4. But the key is only found in, like, Stage 2. So you're going to have to drag it across levels.
Actually, it is in that level, but it's at the very beginning. So you have to bring it pretty much all the way to the end.
Oh, man. I must be misremembering which keys are where, but it's awful.
But, unlike the PC Engine version... Yeah, I think the idea is that you don't want to fall into the pit. If you fall into the pit, you kind of screw yourself out of the best ending, because that's the route that you need to take.
Yeah, you cannot rescue the maidens, and there is no save system, there is no going back.
Yeah. It does have a password system, but man.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that means you're keeping your old passwords to make sure you know where you can get back, so you can try once again to not get thrown into that same stupid pit.
And then the boss fight for that part of the game is also harder because, once again, less responsive controls and slowdown, which it does affect your ability to dodge his attacks.
There is this is actually interesting because like death would ultimately get associated with the clock tower because thematically that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But this is the first game that does it, and that fight is awful. It might be the worst death fight in the series.
Because you've got a limited range of where you can actually move, so and you can fall off.
Yeah, bearing in mind that Richter's sprite is larger compared to the screen real estate in this game.
I mean, technically, so you could fall off on the boat in the PC Engine release, but I think you can get back up.
It's much harder to do so. There's just a lot more real estate on the PC Engine's boat. Whereas this, like, the size of the clock tower's edge is only, like, half the screen. Mm-hmm. And he just, he'll fill the screen with sickles. Like, you'll get hit with one of his attacks, and it's supposed to give, like, the impression that time has slowed down. But between that and the actual slowdown, the game tends to eat inputs a lot during mm-hmm. that attack. So if you get hit once, you're probably going to get hit again.
Also, this version's missing the whole plot line with Shaft because he's not even in here. Instead, we've got some generic necromancer who throws gravestones at you.
Much less interesting.
In an underground cavern somewhere.
It makes the connection to Symphony of the Night even more confusing.
Yeah.
But it's a bad version of the game. Like I've seen some people argue, like
it's missing
it's
a couple other levels too. But
it only has the two bonus levels.
At
so.
Least the alternate version of Stage 5 plays Opus 13.
Yeah, it's something. But again, that's another situation where it's like just listen to the music, you'll be happy.
And Cross of Fear is not here though because that level's not here.
Yeah. I don't recommend it. There's one of my favorite things when I first played this, I went back over, I was screenshotting half the time, and one of the things that it does that no other Castlevania game does in a bad way is that, like, Castlevania usually has, like, a sense of level continuity. Like, you'll swap screens, but, like, it'll be clear how you got where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in this SNES Dracula X, you'll have this situation where, like, you walk through a doorway, and then you get to the next area, and there's just a wall behind you. And it's like, how did I get here? What happened? There's no doorway.
And it's or just going from level 1 to level 2.
Yeah, just things happen, more things happen. The game doesn't quite know how to fit them together. One of my favorite artistic failures here is that at the beginning of the final level, you're ascending, like, one of the towers, but like to the highest tower to reach Dracula. But in the background, you also see what appears to be the tower you should be ascending. The artistic continuity is just terrible.
Oh yeah, back to the death fight. The Western version of this game did some slight censorship, and for whatever reason, like death is supposed to be splurting blood when you attack him, which in itself
that's all skeletons are known to do.
Yeah, but they didn't want it to be rated M, so they changed the color of the blood to white. So it looks like he's spitting out milk.
Listen, that's how you build strong bones.
It's why death is so difficult in that game.
He's so strong. He drank so much milk.
It's like you're just basically hitting him, and all the milk he drank is just spilling out. You're just being a meanie.
I needed that.
Another thing about this game, it's the missing animation frames from the PC Engine release, which just makes certain actions and tells for bosses harder to predict.
And they make a stiff game feel stiffer.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's also really expensive now and really hard to track down.
Mm-hmm.
It's the worst of all worlds at this point.
But the ending music and the intro music are just awful. They're like the two worst tracks in that game.
The game makes quite a first impression, let me tell you.
But I'm wondering who made that version of the game. I need to look it up.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it could have been the same team. They would have been busy after that.
I think it might have been the Sparkster team, but I'm not entirely certain.
The problem is there's also two of those.
Yeah. But I'm thinking of the Super Nintendo one.
Ah, Super Nintendo Sparkster, which is probably the better of the two Sparksters, but still not great.
See, it doesn't say what specific branch of Konami here, so, oh well.
Anonymous. Probably someone in Tokyo. But, yeah, it's not great. I would not go out of my way to play this video game.
You could get it on Wii U, but,
Could you? Did they ever put that on?
Yeah, via the Virtual Console.
Oh my god.
But, or you could just get it on the Wii, but, or you could get it on your new 3DS.
Oh yeah, they did do that. Oh, I'm so... Don't, by the way.
But, yeah. If you were fast enough, you could got the original Rondo Blood. Untranslated, unfortunately, but it's there.
And it's so much a better use of your time and money.
Or you could just get the PSP release of, the Dracula X Strunkles, which we're talking about next.
That does not have the Super Nintendo version.
No. It, thankfully.
Yeah, you can. It has all the ones you might actually want to play.
But, Dracula X Chronicles is a collection of the 2D version of Rondo Blood, plus the 3D character model remake of Rondo Blood.
Yeah, those haven't aged well. It was very clearly a decision made, and it was like, well, we can't just sell a collection of old 2D games. There has to be some jazzed-up new 3D version.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of muddy, they're kind of drab. The game still plays fine, but I mean...
The cutscenes are interesting, because like, they're Symphony of Night style, and the game uses similar art style.
But otherwise, it's... You know, you're mostly buying it for... Symphony and the original version of
apparently Drax got an itch, and so he's just gonna steal Richter's girlfriend.
I'm sure there's plenty of doujins of that. But yeah, it's a fine remake. I mean, it's really cheap.
Well, in addition to like two other girls, and then Maria just tries to rescue them and gets captured. So that's why she's there.
There's a little more contextualizing. The game incentivizes rescuing the girls a little more. And there's a new form of Dracula, because Ego really likes three-form Dracula.
Where he is basically a souped-up version of himself, and he can turn into blood that hurts you.
It's a tough fight. It's a good... It's
and
a, fun
and a blood panther, which is, I think, a reference to the fact that Alucard turns into a wolf.
Yeah, probably. It's also probably a reference to some... Like, those weird Shadow Panthers show up a lot in sort of reference to... I want to say Babel II, which is an old manga that was very, very influential. Mm.
There are also some enemies in Symphony of Night, but... They're not made of blood, though. They're like
which
amorphous
makes them...
blobs or something.
Yeah, which makes them less fun. It's a fine remake. It's bolstered by the fact that it's packaged with the original, even if it's not a perfect emulation of the original.
Yeah, and the game plays well enough. It just looks visually dated. But
Its visuals aged less gracefully than the game it's remaking, which is the problem.
But the version of Rondo Blood is the first version of the game that was officially licensed and localized in English, including an English soundtrack or voice track.
Yeah, it was like it was clearly a passion project, because I'm sure at the time it was very much like a common question because this was when Castlevania games would actually come out every year or so. So it was a common question that Ego would get, was like, is Rondo of Blood ever going to get an official US release? And so this was like, yes, finally it is back.
But all versions of all three games all had dual audio tracks.
Yeah.
That was interesting. But if you play the 3D version, which you have to play at first to you find secrets throughout the level, and they unlock these games. Yeah. And like in addition to that, you can collect soundtrack musical notes, and they let you swap out the tracks that you can play in Dracula X Rondo of Blood.
It's inconvenient, but it's kind of fun. Like, it's an enjoyable, like, it gives some incentive to really scour the alternate routes through the...
They also reworked the way, you get to the maidens.
Yeah.
Like you could get to the maiden early and tell you need to find the key, and then you have to go find the key.
But it gives some incentive to explore. It gives a little more color to the game. So, I mean, it's fun. It's a decent remix of Rondo of Blood. It doesn't break anything.
But, I think Maria still has her super berserker form.
Yeah, she is balanced exactly as she was before, which means that she is much, much more competent at this vampire slaying thing.
Also, her slide's hilarious, because I think she slides on her stomach.
Yeah, she does like this sort of thing as though she had just been pushed and fallen onto her stomach and then slid as far as she could go. It's very strange looking. I enjoy it.
But, that's the Dracula X games, and we gotta move on to its sequel, Kumajo Dracula X 2. I forget what it was titled in Japanese, but that translates to Nocturne in the Moonlight, but which is a much better title than Symphony of the Night, in my opinion.
Let's see. I remember once looking this up. It's, why am I forgetting? It's like Gekko no something.
Tsukiyomi, maybe?
Oh, well, it's failing me at the moment.
Anyways, this is more in the style of Castlevania 2 and Link, The Adventure of Link.
Yeah, there's clearly some attempt to sort of expand the... Well, what if there was no regular path? It was all just crisscrossing alternate paths.
Also, let's make Alucard the main character.
Yeah, because that means we can... Like, a lot of this was them sort of building on the idea of, like, well, if we're not playing as a Belmont, we don't have to keep all of the Belmont traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make a very different game.
And since he is half vampire, he can do things like turn into a wolf, which eventually gets the ability to run across the screen really fast and destroy anything.
And glitch out the game real bad sometimes.
Yeah, like the 100, or no, the 200... 40% glitch or whatever it is.
Yeah, people eventually found ways to bug the map in such a way that it would just keep giving them percentage over and over. So, like, you would see people that just, like, oh, I just went around the map to build up the percentage again. I'm at, like, 12,000%.
And there's also the bat, which lets you fly and get to other places, as long as you have MP. And the bat eventually gets the ability to use echolocation to get through dark areas. And then that could be later powered up to actually damage enemies. Or you could just do a bat smash attack.
Yeah, wing smash, which is also a really fast way to get through the area.
Yeah, like, that's another thing. Alucard has spells. The game doesn't tell you how to use these spells. You kind of just stumble on them, or you buy, like, spell scrolls to tell you how to do them.
Yeah, though those scrolls are not necessary. If you know the combination, you can use them from the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm. Like, including really nice. Dracula's iconic fireball, which if you also hold up, he'll do the big fireballs.
Yeah, I appreciate that, like, oh, well, he's the son of Dracula, so he has Dracula's attacks. They're not useful, but he can do them.
Hmm.
The really useful one is the one that's, like, Soul Steal, that just steals health from everything on screen kills most things.
The less useful version of Soul Steal that only works on enemies that bleed is the Bloodletting, which lets you restore your HP by sucking their blood. Which you have to get in a specific angle because it arcs. When you cut enemies.
Yeah, it's all of these have really specific...
Tetris Spirits is also a decent spell, but you probably won't ever use that much.
Yeah, they all have really specific button inputs. They're like Street Fighter-style button inputs, but they're...
Yeah, and even Richter has abilities like Alucard, where you could just do this weird attack where he'll just rush an enemy and like he'll create like an axe. And just run right through them.
Yeah, he's got...
Kick attack.
One of my all-time dream unfeasible ROM hacks is a version of Rondo of Blood where Richter has his Symphony of the Night moveset.
That would break the game so much.
It would, but it would be so fun for a brief period.
He also has, like, a super uppercut attack. And like, a lot of people made fake moves from, like, this thing called, like... I think they called it like Armageddon or something. I guess he summons meteors, but it does not attack that he has. People are lying.
Yeah. This was very much prime real estate for late 90s internet rumor mongering because of things that actually were in the game. It made it very plausible sounding that, like, oh, there could be other insane things in this video game I've just never found.
Kind of like the play as Akuma mod in Resident Evil 2, which
April Fool's joke. That April Fool's joke is powerful, and I'm very sad that they didn't incorporate it into the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Yeah, let's Setsui Hado everybody to death.
Let me throw fireballs in Resident Evil 2. But yeah, this game was a hotbed of rumors and speculation because there was a lot of very strange things in it that don't seem like that. If you told someone them out of context, they'd be like, "Don't lie about the video game to me."
There's also weird Easter eggs, like with specific weapons, where like they'll also have like Street Fighter moves, but like, if you use one sword in particular, it arcs across the screen and spells out Verboten, which is forbidden in German.
There's so many weird things in this game. Like, there's so many dumb things in it. Like, there's tons of healing items that all functionally heal about the same amount, but they'll just be different for some reason. Or, like,
and you'd
the
eat them like
the
you,
peanuts.
And you'd eat them like you would, like, a wall chicken by throwing
yeah,
it on...
He has to throw it on the ground. He can't eat anything except unless he's like a dog. Except for peanuts. He has to throw those into the air and catch
like,
them.
The only instant healing abilities are like the potions.
The potions, yeah. It's real dumb. I love it. Again, the peanuts are infamous because it's literally you have to throw them into the air and then catch them.
Mm-hmm.
If they land on the ground, he won't eat them.
And getting poisoned obviously doesn't poison you because he's a vampire, but it does weaken your character for a bit.
Yeah. There's a lot of just very strange one-off edge cases that this game has, and also just a lot of really stupid, like, one-off drops that you'll get.
And weird sub-weapons like the crystal, which is basically a reference to Dracula's eye, I think, in 2.
It's a weird sub-weapon. It's not that useful. Sub-weapons in general aren't that useful. They're just fun.
and then there's the holy ash, which is like a shittier version of the holy water.
Yeah, it's very specifically...
It covers a wider area, though, so...
Yeah, it's very specifically in reference to, like, a Japanese pop cultural, like, spiritual guru man at the time.
Mm.
But there's a few, like, very... specific pop culture references in Japan.
And the cross doesn't function like the way Richter uses the cross. Instead, he basically does Richter's item crash.
Yeah. I like that touch because it implies he can't throw the cross. He can't because he's still a vampire. So he has to, like, he can summon them around, but he can't touch them.
Yeah, it's like he can use God's power, but he can't touch the object that has God's power in it.
Yeah. It's a nice touch. The game is perhaps most notable for how many weird touches that it has. A lot of just strange interactions. One of my favorite dumb things in it is the Portrait of Sire, because it's just like an actual like historical painting of Vlad Sepeš.
But it's like I think in Portrait of Ruin you've got the inverse of that where Jonathan Morris, who. Not to be confused with John Morris.
Very different.
Jonathan is actually his son. But he summons previous spirits of the Belmonts to attack everything on screen, and it hurts a lot.
Yeah. But I'm trying to remember. There's at least one like familiar that got removed from...
The two of them, actually.
Yeah. There's like the... There's one that's very specifically, like, was in reference to a, like, Japanese comedian that just got thrown out.
Yeah, it was called the Nose Goblin, but,
Yeah.
And then there's the pixie and then the sprite. I think it's the sprite that was cut out.
Yeah, they were very similar.
But, like, in the Japanese version, it had the function of playing interview, or allowing you to play interviews instead of a sound test, but we only got the sound test.
Yeah, they were not going to translate those interviews in any fashion, so, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have been useful.
And, like, the only other, like, the Nose Goblin one doesn't function any differently than the Demon one, so.
Yeah, it's just, it was something that I can understand why they removed it.
But the Demon Familiar, basically uses his little spear to hit switches that you can't otherwise access.
A switch!
And the pixie will, when it gets higher levels, use your healing items that will, like, cure statuses. Like, you get, if you're in a stone, she'll whack you in the head with a hammer. And she'll also point out hidden walls. That is, if you haven't already destroyed it, because it does take a while for the audio to kick in.
There's so many of these, like, strange one-off things. There's the platform shoes that just increase Alucard's height by one pixel.
And then there's, like, other artifacts you can get that, like, let you super jump.
Yeah. Like, you get a nice mix of, like, this thing exists because it's useful, and this thing exists because it's funny for it to exist. There's the tape that you can change its color via the RGB values.
Or to go through walls and then eventually get the power to retain that form, and then another power that lets you turn to poison mist.
Yeah, that's not a helpful way to attack, but I mean, it's something you can do.
If you need to escape and you want to hurt your enemies still, then you could do that.
Yeah. This game is also the recipient of a very strange translation.
Yeah. The most infamous of being the intro, where, what is a man?
What is a man? Robert Belgrade's Alucard is still a very, like, compelling, deep-voiced, but also obviously recorded in someone's bathroom. I really enjoy the original dub. I feel like the second dub,
I think probably Belgrade's the voice of Alfred in the upcoming Bloodstained.
Yeah, he was called back specifically for Bloodstained. I'm very excited for that. Mm. He shows up in a few.
And David Hayter is playing as Zangetsu, so cool.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun voice cast. But there's a few interesting, Konami's games that were dubbed into English in Japan share a lot of strange people on their voice tracks. There is I can't remember what system it's for, it's either PlayStation or Saturn, but there is a weird adventure game that is also meant to be an English instructional tool.
Mm.
It's about, like, a high school getting, like, you know, filled with demons, but for some reason, like, the entire Symphony of the Night cast is in it.
Mm.
It's very strange.
Also, you also still don't play as Maria, but if you have the PSP version or the Saturn version, you can play as Richter or Maria right from the start. But the way the PSP version does is you still have to enter their name.
Yeah, it didn't. The way the Saturn version presents it is strange because it gives you a choice at the beginning of them. I've played the Saturn version, and it gives you a choice at the beginning, which implies that all three of them are equally valid choices, which is strange because they're absolutely not meant to be played in that direction.
Yeah, like, they cut all story content, and they're just there.
They have no story. They have, like, Richter and Maria just have everything they're going to get abilities-wise from the beginning.
So they level up like Alucard does either.
Yeah, they get a one-time power boost when they go to the second half of the game, which everyone knows about, but I'm still dancing around because we haven't discussed it yet. But when they get to the second half of the game, they get a one-time power boost, and then they're done. That's all they're going to get.
But this game had a lot of interesting areas and very good atmosphere, and it was one of Michiru Yamane's strongest soundtracks.
Yeah, it's got a very good, very large soundtrack. It's just
and,
a lot of
and there's an insane level of detail, despite the fact that the sprites don't real have real faces.
Yeah, the like Alucard's animation, like walk cycle animation, is crazy. He's got so many bits of his outfit that just sort of billow along that like would have been just a pain every sprite to adjust, but they look so good.
And then, like, if you have the pixie rest on your shoulder, if you just sit there for a while and then decide to move, she'll fall off.
Yeah. Oh, man. There's a lot of just silly things. Like, we've basically just been recounting all the silly things you can find in this
or,
game.
Like, or if you, like, turn into, a bat or something and then you get stuck in a small area, Alucard will be like, what? I can't move.
It's so good. There's the confessional.
He also does it if you put the weird armor that's the Axe Lord armor on, and then which destroys certain bosses, by the way. But
yeah,
because basically all you can do is move forward really fast and attack with your axe. But like since the animation for it is so short, you could just basically abuse the amount of frames to just DPS an enemy.
Yeah. There's the confessional, which is always worth remembering, because it's just like you sit there and, like, it's not even intuitive that you can sit on chairs, but you can.
Hmm.
And then, like, the game will, like, either, I think it'll either, like, give you a healing item or it'll just stab you.
Yeah, and, like, you'll either sit in the confessional chair or you'll pretend to be a priest.
That seems normal.
And you can tell the evil ones are because they're colored dark.
Yeah. There's, you run into things in this game, and it's like, what is this doing here? And then you, like, actually interact with it. And it's
also the one area of the game that has absolutely no music playing.
Yeah.
And a weird, creepy clock plays instead.
There's that, there's the fake save screen that the first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell is this? And then that turns out to be really important. Oh, man.
Yeah, because, like, it's a sequence you have to do in order to get the items needed to get a certain other item that lets you get to the true part of the game.
Yeah, the true ending requires you to do all of these. It's complicated.
Because, like, you could either choose to kill Richter and get the bad ending, or you could find out that there might be something wrong with him, kill him anyway, and get another bad ending. Or you could put on the glasses to see that he's being controlled by Shaft.
Yeah. And if you played the Super Nintendo game, you're very confused. But, one thing I wanted to mention about this game's very strange translation is that it's also had a bunch of additions made to it to reference Tolkien for some reason.
Mm.
Someone was just a real nerd here.
There's also, like, the most abusable weapon in this game called the Kiss of Grimm, which cuts things up repeatedly.
Yeah, that would get successors in future games. The Sorrow games had the Valmon Way, I think, is what it's called.
Mm.
But none of them were ever as powerful as the Chrysagram.
Or you could get Alucard's shield, use the shield rod spell with it, and then it becomes a thing that just destroys anything as long as the shield's up.
Yeah, there's a lot of very strange. One of my favorite things is
it's like the best way to cheese Dracula in the game.
It's ridiculous. One of my favorite things is that there's the Alucard equipment, but there's also the Alucart equipment, which is just the Alucard equipment, but garbage.
And you can put in a code that lets you have an insane amount of luck, which drastically improves the drop rate, because the drop rate in this game is pretty terrible for rare items.
Luck mode is ridiculous.
But at the cost of having reduced stats everywhere else. But that's not a big deal, because the game's actually pretty easy anyway. Because, like, you can get through most of the game without using most of the weapons or items you pick up.
Yeah, it's not a hard game. You'll level up a lot just by playing it, and there's nothing that, like, the only thing that's actually hard is, like, Gallimoth in the bonus area that is nothing but enemies. Like, it's in the second half of the game, and it's nothing but enemies from Kid Dracula.
Yeah. And Gallimoth himself can
be completely cheesed by one item.
Yeah, the barrel circlet.
Which will just absorb all of his attacks.
Or, if you're playing as Richter, you can basically get to the corner where his head is and just throw daggers until he dies.
Yeah. If you're playing as Maria, it's even more tedious because you're doing the same thing, but you're doing it with birds.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes, like, 30 minutes.
Because the barrel circle will just let you absorb all of his attacks, and you could just wail on his legs.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's, oh yeah, that does remind me that another of the strange translation choices of this. In every other game, the giant orb of corpses is known as Legion. In this, yep. It is
Grand
a
Balloon.
Kurt Vonnegut reference, Grand Balloon, which is a funny name, I appreciate it, but it's also very strange that they made that choice.
And if you go in the second library, oh yeah, by the way, the second area of the game is just the castle, but it's flipped around and then it's got different enemies.
Yep, it's more fun in concept than in execution, but if
you go to the inverse library, you'll fight a bunch of Wizard of Oz enemies.
There's a lot of just, like, someone put this in because, like, this game, as far as can be told, the game was in development for, like, 3 years, and it shows because there's a lot of just assets in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of its successors would have the luxury of such a long development time, so there's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Which is why they just reuse these assets over and over again in the DS game.
Yeah. They got really, like, it made sense. I mean, like, they weren't getting a lot of budget by that point, so it's like, well, there's a bunch of Symphony assets we can still use.
And they translate well into this console, so why not?
Yep. Why not? And but, then they took, then they made a Saturn version, and they added two more areas. They're bad.
Yeah. And, like, the only other, like, improvement, the only improvement, really, that the Saturn version has over the PlayStation version is that the biggest problem with the Inverse Castle is that a lot of the areas are you playing the same exact track, and I think the Saturn version replaced them with remixes of older Castlevania tunes.
Yeah, I think they like, at the very least, they mix it up so it's not using that frickin' Takata song again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
there's one enemy that's, like, absolutely indestructible, though, but you can just soul steal off of it endlessly if you need health. Like, they're the flying bullheads in the Inverse Coliseum and, like, the outer wall areas.
Yeah. But, let's see, yeah, I'm trying to remember what the Saturn version even added area-wise. I think it's just the Underground Garden.
Like, it had two areas, the Underground Garden and the prison.
Oh, the prison. There's nothing in either of them, because if they did, if there was anything in either of them, they would have to actually change the route through the game, and they weren't going to do that.
So where did they put them in the map? I mean, there's, like, spaces they could put them, but I'm trying to remember where they connect to.
I want to say one of, like, the Underground Garden you reach by, like, there's an area you can reach in the PS1 version
glitching.
The entrance.
Yeah.
That leads nowhere, and it's obvious there was supposed to be something there, but I'm not convinced it was going to be the Underground Garden, but... Mm-hmm.
I've seen people glitching there, but if that glitch goes south, you'll end up in, like, a negative zone, and you'll have to reset the game.
Which, I mean, you're glitching into an area, so you kind of expected that. But I don't remember where the prison ends up. I want to say it connects two areas that were otherwise connected in a reasonable fashion.
There's also
anyway.
Other, like, silly items in the game, like the Sword of Dawn, which just summons warriors for you. And then another one, like, which basically summons the Gradius barrier item.
The game loves its silliness.
It's like, I'm surprised MOA heads didn't make it into the game at some point.
I think they're in some of the GBA or DS games.
Yeah. But, the Dracula in this game is basically just him chilling on a throne which has been transformed into a bunch of demon heads.
And he's here to teach his son about the Bible.
And if you tried defeating him about, normally, he's a lot harder than ever because he's got a high HP count and... he takes up most of the screen, and you can't really get around him.
Yeah, he's absolutely designed to be like, well, you scoured the inverted castle for all the dumb options you could find, and so you've
found your way to... So here's several ways you could cheese him. You can use the Alucard shield to kill him really quickly. You could use the other shield rod combinations, like the Night Shield, which will throw
blades. Yeah, because all those are ridiculous, too.
And then there's the Skeleton Shield, which is a big laser. And then there's the Medusa shield, which is just a Medusa head. But it shoots eye lasers everywhere for a while. Or you could use the Kissogram, which takes longer, because, like, even though it's really, really good at DPS, it's not exactly the strongest weapon in the game.
Yeah, it's powerful for its sheer rate of attack.
Yeah. But the most powerful single damage and weapon in the game is the sword familiar sword, but the only downside to that is it's actually kind of slow. You're better off using the sword you can get from fighting those final guards.
Yeah, the output per hit is strong, but the slow swing speed is not worth it. Mm-hmm.
And you have to level up the 99, which takes forever, so...
But yeah, you got a lot of options. By the time, if you scour both versions of the castle, you will have found something that breaks the game wide open enough that it won't matter.
Yeah, there's also the Ghost Familiar, which will just cling to an enemy and absorb it of its life force, giving it to you.
Yeah, which there's not much answer that most things have to that.
But the demon one's actually really useful. And the Sword Familiar as a familiar is pretty strong. Once you level it up, it starts attacking decently.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What's the...
He also has a weird spell where he just shoots a bunch of mini-blades at the enemy.
Tokyo Tomate.
Also, you can also go underneath the librarian, the area that connects to him, and you could just use that super jump and then get items out of it, if you can keep it up.
There's so much in this game. Mm-hmm. Just so much weird stuff just poking around its weird edges.
But the emulation for this on the PSP is acceptable, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know how much. I don't know if it's better or worse than the Requiem port, but.
I would imagine that the Requiem port is probably going through layers of emulation by that point. So.
Also, the original release of this game had the cheesiest ending song ever with "I Am the Wind."
Oh man, yeah, "I Am the Wind," which never came back unless you're playing an emulation of the original PS1
version.
Because
Rika Muranaka, who did the song for that, as well as the ending song for Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2. I guess there was licensing issues, and they didn't renew, so...
I Am the Wind was never as well received as
the Metal Gear songs. Which, it was replaced by some generic song in the... Well, it is weird, because, like...
The XBLA version.
Because the XBLA version had that song removed, but the PSN version of the original release... had it, but then they patched it out eventually.
The generic song is like some sort of remix of like old Castlevania music, as I want to say, but it's not a particularly standout one. It's just, well, it's not "I Am the Wind."
I think "I Am the Wind" is kind of outdone by that opera soprano that you get at the end of Curse of Darkness, though.
Oh man, I got a lot of fondness for Curse of Darkness, even though it's not a great game.
But that's the end of the Dracula X games, and we've actually got an hour. We had a lot to say about three games.
There's
two
a
and
lot
half.
To say about them. They're very important. They're very fun. Like, there's a reason that these ones kind of dominate the conversation as Castlevania goes.
And it's also inspired many, many clones.
Yeah. Like Symphony of the Night kind of crystallized the idea of, oh, you don't have to be Metroid, mm-hmm. and that. That influenced a lot of games. A lot of games. And continues to influence games by its own creators, because Igarashi is still making Bloodstained.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed it's out this summer.
Which we're going to talk about, and that's actually the whole reason I decided to do this retrospective.
Yeah, so fingers crossed that it doesn't get delayed, making the retrospective a little premature.
But, until then... Next week, we'll have finally getting to the GBA stuff. No, wait. Before that, we'll do the PS2 and 64. Yeah.
The most beloved entries.
Most, quote-unquote.
Listen, I've got a lot to say about them, and no, they are not beloved by anyone, but I still enjoy some of them. That section in... Frickin' Castlevania 64, where you're carrying the Nitro, can go burn in hell.
I don't think I've seen anything so much aggravating than that.
There's a lot of sections like that, where it's just like, oh, the edge gravity, I fell off a cliff, and now I have to start the level over again.
But, we'll leave you with that nugget for next week. Until then,
be prepared.
Bye-bye. And don't be a pile of miserable secrets or something.
Miserable little pile of secrets.